welcome to another edition of the Black Doctor Speak podcast. Black Doctor Speak is your source for vetted, accurate information on African-American health from some of the nation's top doctors and is sponsored by the African-American Wellness Project.
Welcome to the Black Doctor Speak podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Lenore. A topic for today is prostate cancer in African-American men. Why is it so confusing? Our special guest is Dr. Dawood Langford. Dr. Langford is a board-certified urologist with special training in robotic surgery and urologic oncology. He's one of the younger physicians with a lot of tools that have been developed over the past few years to deal with this issue, both diagnostically and therapeutically. So let's welcome Dr. Dawood Langford to our program. He's going to clear up this question of why prostate cancer is so confusing in African-American men. All right, Dr. Langford, welcome to our program. Over the past few months, I've had several of my friends across the country diagnosed with prostate cancer, some of it in the late stages. After all the information that's out there about the threat that prostate cancer poses to Black men, why is there still so much confusion about what to do from screening all the way through to management?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me, Dr. Lenore. It's a pleasure for me to be able to share my experience and hopefully help patients pursue and achieve better outcomes. You know, prostate cancer is very common. It's a common disease. It's the second leading most common death among Americans, especially African-Americans. And so one of the issues that happens in any cancer disease or phenomenon is there's a lot of variations or diversity even within cancer itself. We like to think of prostate cancer is a multifocal disease that sort of manifests in many different ways. So each individual patient will have a journey, have a story. And I think part of the problem is when we try to have one size fits all for treatment, when we try to pursue a one size fits all for diagnosis, I think that's where we come into problems. I think every individual situation has to be dealt with individually.
So that's a good explanation. I think that every man is different, and every man has a different way of handling his own health. Now, I'm going to talk to you and ask you the questions that I think people would ask you and that I ask you when I first was concerned about prostate cancer. At what age should a man get PSA or prostate cancer screening, and how old do you stop?
Yeah, so I use the United States Preventive Task Force recommendations, but ultimately I use the American Urologic Association recommendations. I kind of use those both, but the AUA overrides when it comes to urologic diseases. And the AUA recommends screening for prostate cancer between the ages of 55 and 69. There's been a lot of data that looked at population-based outcomes, and it appears that the ages from 55 to 69 if we are to diagnose prostate cancer at that time, we're able to prevent death and also prevent issues coming into the quality of life for patients. So my recommendation will be between the ages of 55 and 69, unless there's an exception to the rule, and that is if you have a family history of prostate cancer or you have other risk factors, genetic risk factors.
You know, some of the confusion comes about because the American Cancer Society suggested men over a certain age don't need to get PSAs and probably shouldn't get them. What is your concern about that?
For some time, we believe, you know, and this is the medical community, that prostate cancer wasn't an aggressive disease. And so there was a lot of literature approximately 10 years ago. I think it was 2009. There was a United States Preventive Task Force recommendations for and basically for prostate cancer screening, and they recommended against screening for prostate cancer. But there was a huge backlash. And as I just mentioned, the second leading cause of death, one of the issues that happened was we saw a resurgence in more aggressive forms of prostate cancer the following 10 years after that recommendation was given. So as a result, we found more aggressive prostate cancer and also disparities in outcomes. Higher aggressive prostate cancer being diagnosed among African-American patients and more people dying from prostate cancer. So in result, there was a change to that recommendation. And now screening is actually recommended. And that screening is recommended between the ages of 55 to 69, unless there are certain risk factors that put you at higher risk.
What about over the age of 70?
So there's a recommendation against screening unless there's risk factors. And so some of those risk factors, if we go through them, they're genetic risk factors. You know, we look at the being of African descent as a risk factor for having aggressive prostate cancer. But also, I think more importantly, what is your father's health? If your father had prostate cancer and your grandfather had prostate cancer, there's a high risk that you could. Also, the BRCA gene, breast cancer in the maternal side can put you at risk for prostate cancer as well. So the issue is that in patients with increased risk factors and more than one risk factor, I would probably recommend screening outside of the age of 70. And, you know, up until they have a 10-year life expectancy. So if they're at 80 and they have a 10-year life expectancy, they're expected to live for another 10 years, then probably keep screening. Because we look at from 10 to 15 years as a time frame where prostate cancer could become a risk for your quality of life or could become a risk for your mentality.
You know, that's always been my concern, because my concern is that why not have more information? What does that hurt? The only thing that seems to be a controversy is what you do when you get that information. And so consequently, my concern for myself is I would probably continue to get screened, but I have special circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head when you talk about the controversy of once you do find out you have prostate cancer, what is to be done at that point? And I think that's where the anxiety comes for a lot of patients, for people, when they found out they have prostate cancer and they fear the side effects from a treatment, or they fear, you know, what could happen, the result of just letting the prostate cancer spread and continue on to grow.
You know, my cancer was picked up by a digital rectal exam. Is a digital rectal exam still useful?
Yeah, the digital rectal exam is a very it's a tried and true physical exam. We do the digital rectal exam, but this is not necessarily a screening tool. We believe that once you have prostate cancer and you're able to actually feel it on a digital rectal exam, it's probably too far gone. It's probably a cancer that is already spread outside the capsule of the prostate. Now, that's still a good screening tool for someone who does not know if they have prostate cancer or not, but you still need to have a prostate biopsy. In the past, there was a lot of physical exams that produced suspicious feelings of prostates, and they'll have a suspicious area of the prostate, and then the person or the patient was then referred on to a urologist, and then they got more intensive screening. But I think that the digital rectal exam is not necessarily a screening instrument. It's just an additive physical exam finding that can help push the patient along.
All right, thank you for that. Now let's talk about the biopsy. In the past, biopsies have been catch as catch can. Some people had several different biopsies who turned out to have cancer. Some people had very serious complications from biopsy. Tell us about how the biopsy has changed and how you use the biopsy.
Yeah, so if a patient is presented with risk factors of prostate cancer and certain, you know, screening tool that we use is the PSA screening, and a PSA above the 4 nanograms per deciliter has been documented, or there's been a change in 0.5 nanograms per deciliter over a 3-month period, then that may necessitate a biopsy of the prostate. And that's a discussion through shared decision-making with the patient that we have. You know, we say, hey, you know, you have a risk for prostate cancer because of these different issues, because of the PSA, because of family history. And so you should get a prostate biopsy. The prostate biopsy is the gold standard. It's going to tell us if there's prostate cancer, there's not. It's not perfect. You know, a biopsy is sort of random in the sense that we take portions of the prostate and we select those portions, and then we test for prostate cancer. You know, the pathologist takes those cells, the urologist gets the tissue, the pathologist looks through those cells and he identifies prostate cancer. But you know, after we get those portions of tissue and we send it off, we basically say, yes, you have prostate cancer, or you don't have prostate cancer. That then from identifying whether you have prostate cancer or you don't have prostate cancer, that then will lead to whether you need treatment or you do not need treatment. So there's a lot of, in prostate cancer, there's a lot of caveats, a lot of different points where there's a discussion of why you need to get something done. And then there's a decision process about what you plan to do.
Expand on how you use the MRI as part of your diagnostic tools.
Well, the MRI is a tool that helps you look into the prostate to see if there are areas that are suspicious for prostate cancer. So again, if a patient presents with risk factors for prostate cancer, and we have a discussion about whether they would like to have a biopsy or not, based on those risk factors, we do a biopsy. But usually, and this is 99% of the time, we do an MRI of the prostate, because the biopsy, as I said, was a little bit random. Now, with the MRI, when we identify areas within the prostate that are suspicious for cancer, it makes our biopsy more sensitive, meaning the biopsy is more likely to find the cancer if we can target it to a certain area within the prostate. And so what we do is we use the MRI to find areas within the prostate that are highly suspicious for prostate cancer. We target those areas and biopsy those areas. And that's usually the standard of care. It's widely accepted as the way that we do biopsies now to make sure that they're more sensitive and that we identify prostate cancer.
How should a Black man respond when his urologist doesn't want to do an MRI and wants to go and just simply do the old punch biopsy?
Well, I think that that's a conversation with that urologist to say, hey, I would like to have a targeted version of this biopsy. I think it's more sensitive. It's a better biopsy tool. And that's how I would respond. Also, you can even request to have that done from a radiologist as well. Radiologists do targeted biopsies as well, or find a urologist that is able to do the targeted biopsy. But I would take a targeted biopsy over a non-targeted biopsy because it's more sensitive, more specific, and is a better tool in identifying prostate cancer.
Let's go directly to the options once a man has prostate cancer. Obviously, there it's just as you say, it's a cookie cutter thing for the individual. And certainly, it depends upon the extent of the lesion. So let's just start with someone who has a PSA of, say, a 7 or so, has a moderately aggressive prostate cancer. Tell us how you grade prostate cancer and what you do when you find it.
Interesting to me, actually, the way they developed the grading of prostate cancer, it was a multidisciplinary approach to understanding why prostate cancer, you know, the pathology, you know, understanding the pathology. Now, I think that's a lengthy discussion, and there's a lot of different caveats there. And this also is why prostate cancer can become a little bit more seemingly confusing because of, you know, the Gleason scoring and how the scoring has two scores, and that contributes to the aggression of your prostate cancer.
What about the aggressive nature of the cancer? Does that matter, or is that factored into the score you just described?
That matters. The more aggressive the cancer is, the higher the score.
All right, we're not going to get into the details of treatment, but let's say I'm coming to you and I have prostate cancer, and obviously there are options for me. Can you just give us a general discussion of how you would go about helping a man make a decision like that? I know it's based upon the aggressive nature of the process itself, but when we talk about treatment for prostate cancer, there's obviously surgery, radiation, and watchful waiting. Could you discuss those three categories as succinctly as you can so a man would know how to engage that discussion with his urologist?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, so essentially, very simple. I like to simplify things. You know, you're a person who's been diagnosed with prostate cancer through screening, right? PSA, identified a PSA level, you got a prostate biopsy, the biopsy shows cancer. The cancer that was identified is going to be a low, intermediate, or high risk. And this is a general category. This isn't all specifics because there's different categories in there, but let's say we have a low, intermediate, and high risk cancer. So each cancer has different treatment options. And you just mentioned the three treatment options in general would be active surveillance, which is just waiting for the cancer to become more aggressive to treat. We call that selective intervention, basically. So active surveillance equals selective intervention. And then there is radical prostatectomy, or that's surgery to remove the prostate. And when we remove the prostate, we can or cannot take different lymph nodes at that time. And then last but not least, there's radiation therapies. And radiation therapies can come in many different forms and fashions, and they have a lot of different names. But those three options are given based on the kind of cancer you have. So for low-grade cancer, you have every option on the table. But nowadays, we recommend against treatment immediately for really low-grade cancers. For low-grade cancers, Gleason 3 plus 3, we would recommend most likely active surveillance. And that is watching the cancer through PSA screening, digital rectal exams, also MRI exams, most likely MRI exams and PSAs, right? Because we talked about how DRE is not that sensitive or specific, and it's kind of antiquated. But through MRIs and PSAs, we watch you. And if there's an increase in the PSA, or if there's a new lesion that's suspicious on MRI, or a lesion that we've already seen gets bigger, then we selectively intervene and treat the prostate cancer. Now, if it's an intermediate risk disease, then you have all three of those options on the table, and you're leaning more towards treatment, which is surgery or radiation. And obviously, if you have advanced disease or very aggressive disease, then you cannot watch this. Active surveillance is not an option, and your options are radiation or surgery to treat the disease, so you can stop it in its tracks, so it doesn't affect your quality of life or affect your life.
You know, that's a very excellent point. Two things in the time we have left to clear up. Watchful waiting doesn't just mean walking away and coming back another day just to reassess, does it? Describe watchful waiting, and describe the fact that for men with metastatic prostate cancer, there are now some increasingly good options.
Yeah, so watchful waiting is an old term. That term was used 40 years ago. And it was basically when they found out that people had prostate cancer, it was really aggressive. And they said, you know what? We're just going to give them hormones and watch for waiting, see how it goes. Now, what we call is active surveillance, because it has this, and this was really crystallized in Canada. A lot of people started buying into this technique where we actually surveillance, we watch the disease, right? And we wait for it to increase. We wait for it to change. And then we selectively intervene when it changes. Basically, we wait till something happens where we think the cancer is getting more aggressive, and then we treat the prostate cancer. And that would be with radiation or surgery. Now, I have patients who I've had on active surveillance for over five years. The cancer has not changed. The PSAs remain the same or have gotten lower. And the prostate, we do repeat biopsies of the prostate every 2 years. And the prostate biopsy does not yield higher levels of disease. And it's still 3 plus 3, okay? Now, aggressive disease, right? And we're talking about the two extremes and the different, and so active surveillance is sort of a new sort of idea, but I think that with our technology of imaging, it's even gotten better because I can image the prostate and really see if there's any changes within the prostate itself, versus in the past, all we have is PSA to monitor them. But now, really aggressive disease, and there's a lot of new treatment options for aggressive disease in the sense that in the past, that's what how we treated aggressive disease was watchful waiting. We would give them an anti-hormone, which is most likely Lupron, or Lupron is a trade name, but it's basically a hormone that it basically stops testosterone production. And so when we stop testosterone production, testosterone feeds prostate cancer. And so we want to stop testosterone from feeding the prostate cancer so that the prostate cancer grows and metastasizes. So that's one option. But prostate cancer that is aggressive is really, really savvy. It can change. It can mutate. And this prostate cancer that mutates, it no longer is susceptible to the hormones, the anti-hormones. So now we have multiple medications where we can stop the prostate cancer cells from being stimulated by testosterone. And so, and this is what's really, really helpful in patients with widespread metastatic disease. You can give them two or three different agents that all target testosterone receptors and the effects of the prostate cancer, the hormones on the prostate cancer. And basically it stops the prostate cancer in its tracks. It can no longer use different types of testosterone to grow. So that's what's helpful in the fight against prostate cancer, and it's helping a lot of patients with metastatic disease right now.
So even metastatic prostate cancer is not a death sentence.
No, not at all. Metastatic prostate cancer is definitely not a death sentence, but it can affect your quality of life, and it definitely can shorten your life, right? So we have tools to prevent that. We have tools to treat it, and so that's why there's a reason always to accept treatment. Even when you find out that prostate cancer is all over your body.
Well, Dr. Langford, I've done a lot of interviews on prostate cancer, and this is one of the very best. I think for men with prostate cancer, you need to look at this several times so that you have an action plan throughout every stage of your life to deal with the possibility of prostate cancer. So thank you again, Dr. Langford, and thank those of you who've taken the time to listen to the Black Doctor Speak podcast and to look at our Facebook Live program. For more information, go to our website at aawellnessproject.org and take advantage of the information on the Prostate Foundation website. Remember, as we always say at the African American Wellness Project, there's more information on our website, so aawellnessproject.org. And for more extensive information, go to the Prostate Cancer Foundation website. That health is your biggest asset, so please protect it.
If you enjoyed our show, please remember to hit the subscribe button so that new episodes are delivered directly to you every week, as well as rate us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, listening to our show is as simple as telling your Alexa, Siri, or Google to play the Black Doctor Speak podcast. Take care, everyone.